So at this point in the 19 letters, Rehfersh switches from book one to book two, like we spoke about in the introduction. He originally wrote this huge book called Horu, which we brought in today. And he shopped it around to publishers, and they told him it's too big, you've never published anything before, and how are we supposed to know that anybody's interested in what you have to say? So they suggested write a shorter little pamphlet, get something out there, see if people like what you have to say, they like your style, they like your content, and if they do, then we'll be happy to publish this bigger book. So he wrote up the 19 letters as a summary of the two books he planned on writing. Book one, Moriah, which was the Hashkafa, or the philosophical background of Judaism, which we've been going through over the past bunch of weeks. And book two was Chorev, which we're going to be introducing now, is basically letters 10 through 14. And then the next 15, 16, 17, and 18, is applying the ideas from Chorev, and really from the beginning of Moriah also, to the questions that Benjamin asked way back at the beginning of the letters. And then he has a few essays, which kind of relate to more contemporary themes or ideas, which and then end up leading us into the actual book, Chorev, which is a new book for us. So, we're going to start with this book two. We're going to start with Moriah. The way Rehfersh opens up in letter 10 is basically saying, I've set out this wonderful, fantastic, amazing system over the past bunch of letters, right? We spoke about how Hashem created the world, and when he created the world in such a way that it was this interconnected system where everything takes in order to give and gives in order to take, and nothing lives alone, and nothing lives for itself, and the only thing that in the entire creation that seems to be self-sufficient is mankind, is humanity, and that could either be like the exception to the rule, which would be very strange, or it could be that Hashem is asking us, is charging us to bring ourselves in to that interconnected, interwoven system and act as the stewards, the free-willed stewards, the firstborns, you can say the managers of creation to make sure that everything runs the way it's supposed to run. We're the ones who can guarantee that the plan that Hashem set for the world, where everything works together and everything is meant to be interacting with each other, to make sure that plan actually works. And then we are part of the system, we do have a role to play, just like everything else has a role to play. We're taking in order to give and giving in order to take, just like everybody else. That was great. And then we traced the progression through history and showed how that was the original plan that Hashem had with Adam and Chava. That got messed up for whatever reason, and then we went to Cain and Hevel, more issues, then Nephilim, more issues. And as we went through that history, Hashem had to start over with the Mabul, and then we eventually get to Abraham. Hashem had to chose to change his plan a little bit and said, instead of just giving this to mankind in general, instead of tasking all of humanity with creating this society and creating this community on earth that I'm looking for, instead I'm going to create this one nation, I'm going to create the Jewish people, and they're going to highlight these values, they're going to be given the tools, which is Torah and Mitzvot, they're going to be given the tools to represent these ideas in the most detailed, strongest way, and the rest of mankind can learn from the Jewish people. So we'll be like the role models, the Jews will be the role models for the world. So that was the past bunch of letters. And now we're opening up the 10th, and Rehfersh says, then obviously speaking as Naphtali to Benjamin, he's saying as if he received, he's writing it as if he received a letter from Benjamin, saying like these ideas are fantastic and they seem really inspiring, but then after like all these shiurim, I turn to the Torah and I turn to the mitzvot and I start reading, and I'm getting these like random things like, don't wear shatnez, and like when you're osobias benolo sishchatu biyomachad, right? And keep kosher, and talis and tefillin, wear black boxes on your head. And I'm trying to find these unbelievably inspiring, incredible ideas that you're talking about in the Torah, and like, they're just not there. Like, you were quoting Tzukim, and you were going through the beginning in Bereishis, and I understood that you were talking out real Torah before. But how do you connect all these hugely inspiring ideas from let's say the beginning of Bereishis? How does that connect to obviously the largest chunk of the Torah, basically the four and a half books or a full four books of 613 mitzvos? How do those two things connect to each other? So Rehfersh says that's a great question. It's obviously the most important question you can ask, because our entire lives are guided by, informed by our commitment to mitzvahs. Everything that we do is done in a framework of mitzvah, is done in a framework of commandment, and there's 613 613 of them. There's obviously a lot to go around, but how can we take this philosophy that we've spoken about in the past couple of letters and translate that into action is what the next letter is going to be about, and really the rest of the Sefer, and then goes into Chorib, is all going to be talking about. So there are going to be two parts to this. The first thing I want to do is present the Ashir, basically, or a discussion of Tamei HaMitzvos in general. And then once we discuss that, we can come back into the letters and see what Rav Hirsch's perspective is on that question and how that translates into the application of everything we've been speaking about till now. So Hirsch basically says that due to a bunch of different factors, he has, I think, four or five of them, due to a bunch of factors, we lost the focus on mitzvos as educational tools. Mitzvos are always number one. The first thing you always need to say is that mitzvos are commandments that we do because Hashem told us to do them. Full stop, period, don't continue. That Hashem told us to do things and we do them. The toelis that comes out of us having this commitment to doing the mitzvos is that we have the opportunity to learn the lessons that Hashem wants us to learn from them. The reason that's such an important distinction is don't think that the lesson is the point of the mitzvah. Now, because that would mean that if I learn the lesson, I no longer need to do the mitzvah. Right? If you do something wrong in school, so they keep you back for, right? They put you, what's okay? They keep you in detention, and you need to write lines on the board like Simpsons. Right? You just need to write lines and lines and lines. The point of writing the lines is theoretically to get you to internalize the message that whatever the line is that you're writing, I will not, I don't know, shoot spitballs in class, like whatever the class is. So once I've internalized that message, I no longer need to write the lines. Right, it's very much one is dependent on the other. In Harry Potter, right, the I will not tell lies, that's carved into his skin. The way Harry knows that he's done is when it's carved deeply enough into his skin that, like, he gets the point. So it's important to point out that the mitzvos are not like that. Mitzvos are commandments that we do because Hashem said so, full stop. And while we're doing those mitzvos, which we're fully committed to, no matter what, we also have the opportunity of getting the following, he says, toalios, we get the following lessons out of doing those mitzvos. Hashem wants us to learn lessons. He's giving us educational opportunities, but it's not that one is dependent on the other. It's not that we're doing the mitzvah in order to learn the lesson. It's we're doing the mitzvah, and through that mitzvah, we're going to learn the following things. So what are the factors which caused us as a nation to lose this focus on mitzvot, to lose this perspective on mitzvot? So he says, number one, there's a total lack of autonomy. Once we went to Gullus, we had a total lack of autonomy that we needed to practice mitzvot in this way. That since we didn't have any form of self-government, since we were totally kuffled to whichever nations we were being hosted by, and they were the ones who were setting up society for us, and we were kind of just guests there, we didn't have the space, we didn't have the opportunities to take individual mitzvot, which were really meant to be like world-encompassing or life-encompassing things, and really experience them in their full power, in their full glory, in their full beauty. It was kind of just limited to whatever the ruling nations would let us do, would let us have. That's what we were able to experience, and that took away a lot of the observance of the mitzvot we were able to actually practice. So now, number one was lack of autonomy. Number two was the fear of enlightenment. This was something which was much more close to Rav Hirsch's time. There is almost like an intrinsic fear of intellectual analysis or intellectual creativity in the context of learning about mitzvos or investigating about mitzvos, because the impact that the Enlightenment had on Jews of his time, where they were so taken by intellectual inquiry in universities and science and things like that, and they didn't see anything similar, anything as stimulating or anything as creative within Torah Judaism, within Torah and mitzvot and learning, but they were just brought away, they were swept away out of Judaism into the universities, and we lost an unbelievable number of Jews that way. Now, the P.S. Eshin Rebbe in the beginning of Chovos HaTalmid, in the introduction, talks about that also. They were basically contemporaries. They were living around the same. He was a little bit later, but it was the same issue. It says that if you just like stick your head out the basement of your door and look around the streets, you'll notice it's unavoidable. There's so many Jews that we used to have as part of our society, part of our community, that are just totally gone. They don't see anything valuable in Torah and mitzvot, and they see so much more exciting stuff in the universities and in intellectual creativity of science, and they're finally being led into those universities, and that was drawing them away. So out of fear of that type of, that type of limud, they, Jews, as I guess, as an educational decision, decided we're not going to try to investigate Tamei HaMitzvos, we're not going to try to understand what's the ideas behind the mitzvos, we're just going to do them, all about commitment, nothing about lessons, nothing about trying to understand why Hashem said this. God's God, we can't understand God, and whatever He told us we do, just because He told us to do it. That was 1 and 2, lack of autonomy and the fear of the Enlightenment. Number 3 was so often throughout Jewish history, we were targeted, we were discriminated against. The suffering that yielded led us as a people to focus so much more on prayer and endurance rather than action and vitality. Right? If there's no one around that you can turn to for protection or to be saved, then obviously the one you're going to focus on is God. He's the only one who has your back. So the focus is going to be a lot more on tefillah, reaching out to Hashem for protection and for help, because nobody around you, definitely not the Jews themselves and none of their neighbors, are able to or interested in helping them out. So that's the strongest focus on prayer as like the be-all and end-all of Judaism. And the other side of endurance, where we just want to survive, we just want to live to see another day, as opposed to thinking proactively and saying, well, how are we able to impact the world in a positive way? It's all about surviving, it's not about impacting. So that was what life was like for the past, 2,000 years. So that we didn't have the opportunity to think about mitzvahs in such a creative or such a big picture way, because it just wasn't shy for the time. We didn't, as a people, we didn't have the opportunity to play that role. It was just about getting to the next day, getting to the next week, getting to the next month, and creating kids, creating families who can take over for us, and maybe they'll have the opportunity. Right around the first time, the beginning of the middle of the 1800s, was when Jews were first getting accepted into places like Germany, being accepted as part of the culture. We know where that went, but Reversh says eventually that it's a hugely important step for us. He said in the last letter when he spoke about Gullus, he said this is a huge opportunity for us that we're finally being accepted into non-Jewish society, and we can really we can demonstrate the values that Hashem wants us to demonstrate to the rest of the world. So that was an unprecedented opportunity, and Reversh says it's important for us to capitalize on that opportunity with understanding the mitzvot in the right way. That was 3. Number 4 was the method of study that advanced the magical building of cosmic worlds. Has anybody heard the pipes theory? That when you do mitzvos, you're opening up, you're like, you're fixing and opening up pipes in Shemayim, and that's what allows like the bracha to flow through. So apparently this is something in Kabbalah or Hasidus or whatever it is, I don't understand it, but it's this idea that there's a whole system of pipes in Shemayim. How many pipes are there? 613. And every mitzvah that you do, every different masa tova that you do, is fixing and opening up. You're like turning a wheel that opens up one of those 613 pipes. And there's a certain type of bracha which is now able to flow through that pipe into the world because of that mitzvah that you did. Is there any sort of rational understanding? No. Is there anything that I'm supposed to be thinking about or having in mind or getting for myself from the Maisa Mitzvah? No. All you're doing is you're blindly following the directions. And by following the directions, Hashem has this whole engineering system up in Shemayim that you're putting into motion, you're putting into action, and letting the bracha come into the world. So that was the study of Kabbalah, basically. And our verse says, I have no issues with Kabbalah. Kabbalah could have been, if it was properly understood, it could have been exactly what I'm trying to do. It could have been a method to understand the deeper essence of every mitzvah, the deeper essence of what Judaism was meant to do for the world. And that was on a much, obviously, much more cosmic stage as opposed to a much more individualist or national stage. But the problem is, Kabbalah has been misunderstood. It's been publicized way too much. It's become this common thing that people have no idea what's going on. But they read the Zohar, they read Kabbalah, and they see things like, there's the Shekhinah, there's the Kutcha Brichu, and they're coming together, and that's what everything's about. And like, they take this as kilu physical ideas when they were never, ever meant to be physical in any way, shape, or form. So they're totally misunderstanding all what the Kabbalistic system was meant to be teaching, and therefore the perspective that they got on mitzvot came out just wildly wrong. So that was issue number 4. The study of Kabbalah misunderstood led to wrong understandings of mitzvot. And then finally, education focused on just basic practice, giving over halacha, as opposed to trying to give over the spirit of the law together with the law itself. This is something which is still going on now in a very, very strong and uninspiring way, that what's halacha class look like in elementary school, high school, and really sometimes in yeshiva also. It's do this, don't do that, check this box, don't check that box, avoid this and do this, and blah, 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 blah. But at no point do you explain, this is like, let's take Shabbos, right? Shabbos is an entire, like, chelek and a half of the Mishnah Berurah. So you can spend an entire like year going through Hilchos Shabbos and Mishneh Berurah, reading through, underlining, getting down every single piece of Mishneh Berurah, Hilchos Shabbos. And if somebody asks you at the end, why did Hashem ask us to keep Shabbos? What are we accomplishing when we keep Shabbos? You will have no idea. You'll be able to tell them what are the three things that you need to not be over on Borer, and like, how can I make sure, like, what's the right way to wipe up a spill on Shabbos, and what's the wrong way of wiping up a spill, and how can I eat fish, and how can I eat chicken without doing it, whatever, and caring and not caring, blah, blah, blah. You'll have all that down cold, but you'll have no idea what the big picture is. What's the Torah? Why did Hashem decide that Melacha was a problem in the first place? It doesn't show up in the Mishneh Berurah. It's important to know Mishneh Berurah. No one's saying it's not important to know that stuff, but part of the system was always meant to be understanding why you're doing this stuff, understand why you're going through these things, why are all these laws so important, so that the laws take on a meaning, so that every single question that you have in Hilchos Shabbos over the, while you're celebrating Shabbos, while you're going through a Shabbos day, is meant to remind you of something specific. It's, I'm not doing melacha because X. Okay, great. Now that I know why I'm not doing melacha, let me try to figure out, is this action, is separating the fish from the chicken, from the bones, as opposed to the bones from the fish, is that going to be melacha or not? Is that creative? Is that not creative? Okay, there's a lot to talk about there. There's actually a tawelos, there's an impact there that's happening on my life. But if it's just, this is wrong, this is right, do and don't do, which is how Allah has been taught for so many years, I'm not getting anything out of that. I'm becoming obedient. That's good. That's an important to all us. But presumably, Hashem did not give us 613 mitzvahs and massive, massive corpuses of halacha just to make us obedient people. So that's not the overall endpoint. Okay. So those are the five things, the four or five things that Refer says is what causes us to lose this perspective on mitzvahs. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to bring it back. So in general, let's talk about Tamei HaMitzvos. It's a pretty wide-ranging machlokes. It's machlokes Rishonim. Should we look for, number one, are there reasons for mitzvos b'chlal? And if there are, should we try to figure out what those reasons are? Okay, so two questions. Are there reasons or are there not? And if there are, should we try to figure them out or not? So at least the shittos I found, and I'm sure it's because I'm biased, the overwhelming majority of shittos seem to say yes. There's a famous bunch of famous Rambams and a bunch of famous Rambans. The big one is on Shiluach HaKein. The Ramban has a long essay in the end of Sefer Devarim. He has one perspective on the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. The Rambam has a little bit of a different one. But he basically says, both me and the Rambam are saying that there is a tevelas to this mitzvah. We're supposed to be learning a lesson either making ourselves more merciful people, more considerate people, and we do that by not causing tzar to the mother bird. The Rambam, The Rambam says it's more about protecting the species, that if you were to kill both the mother and all of their young in one day, that's a Soviet spin also. That's a step towards wiping out the entire species, and Hashem doesn't want us wiping out species like that. So both me, the Ramban says, and the Rambam have this perspective that we're supposed to be looking at mitzvot and understanding what lesson are they supposed to be teaching us. And people come to us and say, you're doing the wrong thing. Hashem doesn't want you to look for reasons for mitzvot. He just wants you to do them. And they point to a couple of different gemaras. There's Omer Al-Kan Tzibor Yagiyu Rachamecha, right? It's a gemara in Brachos. Anybody who says that, Hashem, you have mercy on a bird, you have mercy on a bird's nest, therefore you should have mercy on us. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says that you should be shot, you know, so you tell him to be quiet, he's saying the wrong thing. So what does that seem to show? It seems to show that we're not supposed to try to understand why Hashem said, it's nothing to do with rachamim, nothing to do with mercy. We should just do a mitzvah because it's a mitzvah. And okay, you'll get tzar and olam haba. Whoop-de-doo, it's like playing the arcade games. You go to Dave & Buster's, you get as many tokens as you can, put them in, play the games, get the tickets. And then when you're done with playing, you go to the ticket counter and redeem it all for a prize. That's olam haba, and that's tzar. That's the perspective of mitzvahs that these people seem to have. You're going to cash in this card at the end of the day. Why do you need these reasons for mitzvahs? Hashem doesn't want you coming up with tamim. He just wants you to do the mitzvah, and that's it. So the Ramban says that's not what that Gemara is saying. Homer al kan tzibur yagiyu rachamecha. You don't need to convince God that He should have mercy on you by appealing to the mitzvah of al kan tzibur. That's the problem that Gemara is highlighting. The issue is not that you understood the reason for the mitzvah. The issue is you thought that was necessary in getting rachamim from Hashem. You needed to like debate with Him and convince Him that since you have mercy on the birds, you should also have mercy on us. That's the negative perspective that Gemara is going against. Of course, the reason for the mitzvah is, you do care about the birds, at least the way the Ramban says it. But that's not what I need to talk about. That's not what I need to pull out in order to get Hashem to have rachamim on me. That's the meaning of that Gemara. There's another one. There's the Medrash that talks about shechita. Does it really matter to Hashem if you do shechita from the front of the neck of the animal or from the back of the neck of the animal? What does God care? It's irrelevant to him. What must it be? It must be that Hashem only gave the mitzvos to litzarech behem. What does that mean? We'll see. To litzarech behem sabrios, to be mitzarech creation. So the Ramban says, you're trying to use that to show that there are no reasons for mitzvot, that Hashem is basically arbitrary. They're saying, right, Hashem could have said the front of the neck, Hashem could have said the back of the neck, and he just gave mitzvot to be mitzarech us. So the Ramban says, that source itself is a huge raya for me. What does litzarech behem sabrios mean? Litzarech comes from the shorish, and basically litzarech, to the tziruf is to purify. You can be mitzarech, right? You can be mitzarech gold and silver from impurities. Hashem is giving us mitzvot to get rid of the issues that we have within ourselves. The only way that's going to happen is to understand what lesson is the mitzvah teaching me. So if you take the example of shechita min ha'orev versus shechita min ha'tzavar, which one is obviously going to be much, much more painful for the animal? You're chopping through the entire spine, the back of the neck. You take some blunt club and just smash down in the back of the neck. Obviously, that's making you into an achzari. Obviously, that's going to make you into a horrible, cruel person. You're just smashing animals and destroying them, destroying their entire like form. You're getting them with a mangled body. That's disgusting. Whereas, if you flip them over and you're shecht from the tzava, you shecht from the front of the neck, it's a single cut, it's clean, blood pumps out, and the animal's dead within a second. That's obviously a much more ethical or a much cleaner way of making that happen. Which one did Hashem choose? He chose the one which is going to encourage us to be more humane, more ethical, more considerate people. So the Ramban says, that Gemara itself is a huge raya for me. There's another one, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Mipnei ma lo nisgali tamei Torah. Why didn't Hashem explicitly reveal the tamim for the reasons for the mitzvos? So right off the bat, the Ramban says, you already messed up. The fact that the Gemara says, there are tamei Torah, and Hashem chose not to reveal them, is a huge point in my favor, is that the reasons are there, Hashem just didn't make them explicit. Okay, so it's a good question. Why didn't Hashem make it explicit? And the Gemara answers, because look at what happened when Hashem did. There are three mitzvos that Hashem explained what the reasons for them were. For the mitzvos HaMelech, right? Don't have too many horses, don't have too many wives, don't have too much money. And it says for each one, because the horses are going to bring you back down to Mitzrayim, the wives are going to draw you away from Torah, the Kesef's going to distract you. So for each one of those three mitzvos, Hashem gave a reason in the Torah itself. And then what happens? Shlomo HaMelech comes along and says, I'm a tzaddik, I'm a king, I'm a great guy. There's no chance that I'm going to mess up with these three issues. I'm going to get as much money as I can, and it's not going to distract me. I'm going to marry as many wives as I can. He had like 1,000 wives, and they're not going to be maseir my lev. They're not going to turn me away from Avodas Hashem. And I'm going to get as many horses as I need, as I want. They'll fill my stables, and I'm not going to be brought down to Mitzrayim, the horse trading center of the world. Not going to happen for me. And obviously what happened? All three of those things happened to Shlomo HaMelech, and he ended up with, at least the way the Tanakh described it, I think it says that Shlomo ended up being Obed Avodah Zarah with his wives. So, big issues, obviously. What happened when I was Megala Tamei HaTorah? People said, I already got the lesson, like we spoke about a few minutes earlier. I already got the lesson, so I no longer need the mitzvah. I already figured out the point, so I don't need to go through the motions anymore. That's the problem that Gemara is explaining. So what happened? So Hashem didn't explain the Tamei HaTorah, but he obviously gave us all the literature we needed. He gave us all the lessons pointing in the right direction for us to figure it out for ourselves. But the verse says, the most certain you'll ever be for a Tamei HaTorah is 99%. You're never going to be able to say, I am 100% certain, I'm right, that this is the reason for Hilchot Shabbos, that this is the reason for wearing tefillin. Since you're only 99% sure, you'll never be able to make that one step and say, I'm 100% guaranteed, vadai, sure, that this is why Hashem made this mitzvah. Therefore, you'll never be able to say, I got the lesson down, and therefore I no longer need to do the mitzvah. You'll always have that commitment to practice, because it's, at the end of the day, it's your conjecture, it's not Hashem's guarantee. So by Hashem holding back the Tamei HaTorah, but giving us a system where we're able to learn and figure out what are those ideas, what are those reasons, that means that we'll always retain that commitment to practice, while at the same time still getting out the lessons, because Hashem is giving us enough material to point us in the right direction. So we'll be able to keep that balance without messing up the way, unfortunately, Tanakh describes Shlomo HaMelech taking the wrong direction there. There are a couple of Midrashim, says that Shlomo knew the reasons for every single mitzvah, except for the one that he didn't get, Paraduma, right? The quintessential Chukas Torah. That was the one mitzvah that Shlomo wasn't able to understand, but he got every single other one. 612 out of 613 is not bad. Clearly, there are reasons for every single one, and Shlomo got them. The other manager says that the only person who did understand Paraduma was Moshe Rabbeinu himself. So again, Moshe Rabbeinu got 613 out of 613. There are reasons for every single one. There's some sort of toelas that we're supposed to be getting out of every single mitzvah. Question is, who's able to understand, who's able to come up with each one of those reasons. So the Ramban, throughout this piece, on Shiloh HaKein, is showing over and over again that Hashem has reasons. There's a toelas that he wanted us to get out of each mitzvah. And even though he didn't tell us those reasons explicitly, they're obviously still there. And it's important for us to get out of there. No, it's important for us to do those mitzvahs and get the toalios out of them. There are a couple of strong Rambams, one in the end of Hilchos Mi'ila, one at the end of Hilchos Temura. The end of Hilchos Mi'ila, he says, Ra'u la adam li sponein b'mishpateha Torah HaKadosha v'leida so b'nyanam k'fi kocho. It's important for a person to spend a lot of time thinking about the laws of the Torah HaKadosha, and to know Sofin Yanam Kvikoho, try to understand what the end goal is according to his ability, according to his intellectual strength. But at the same time, something which you don't understand, you obviously still need to do. Don't just decide that you don't need to do things just because you don't understand it. You need to keep that balance in mind. It's important to try to understand, but at the same time, whatever you don't understand, you still need to respect. The Temura one goes on a little bit longer. He suggests in Mi'ila a reason. In Temura, he suggests basically like a really solid psychology reason. Why did Hashem come up with this whole system of Temura? And he gives a whole nice long explanation. Any aspect of a mitzvah which you can explain rationally, you can understand what the takeaway lesson is, you should do that. And then he goes ahead and gives a whole explanation for the mitzvah of Temura. It was very, very nice. The one shita that I found on the other side was a tour in Yerudea by Hakafas HaRosh. It says that Hakafas HaRosh v'ashchazas HaZakein gam be'elu kasuv Rambam she'asram ha'kasuv v'mnei she'osim kein ovdei kochavim. In the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, a lot of the mitzvos, he says the reason, in the third chelek, he goes through a lot of mitzvos and talks about reasons for them, but happens to be the reason that he gives there seem to be very, very circumstantial. And refers later on, he's going to say, like, I'm very not upset with the Rambam, but I just think he was way off. And those, the reasons that he gave, we just don't seem to make any sense, it doesn't seem to fit, and he has a lot of issues with the Rambam's system of explaining the mitzvos. But the Torah says, Ze'eno Mefurash, this reason that the Rambam gave is nowhere found in the Torah. Ve'enanu Tzrichim Levakesh Tam LeMitzvos. We don't need to search out reasons for the mitzvos. Ki mitzvos Amalachem Aleinu Af Lo Neidat Ta'aman. And we're not going to understand them, or we have to do them even though we don't understand. That's obviously the opposite perspective. I'm sure there are other shitos which back that up. He's getting that from somewhere. It's part of that machlokas. But I think there are a lot of big names on the other side. And definitely for as much as it may be a machlokas rishonim, there are enough names. The current time period, I think, definitely justifies choosing one side of the machlokas and saying we're rational people who spend so much of our time and so much of our respect goes to systems that we understand and we're able to appreciate. It's definitely definitely understandable that Hashem gave us a system of logic, he gave us a brain, he gave us a mind that's able to think, and he created a system which plays into that setup. He set us up in a way which we're able to appreciate the laws that he gave us, the mitzvahs that he gave us, and the system that he gave us. He gave it to us to understand, not just to blindly like manipulate cosmic worlds that we're never going to understand or not actually going to appreciate. So those are the two sides of the Machlokas. We're going with the side that there are reasons themselves. That's what we're going for. So, in the 10th letter, he says, let's do this, let's try to understand what is the system of mitzvos, what's the categorization, how does it all fit together? So, forget what you know about Judaism, he says. Listen, as if you had never heard about it before. It's a nice line. Since you had been taught wrong, basically, your whole educational system that we've been exposed to missed the point and didn't teach us the way we're supposed to be taught. Forget everything, ignore everything, and just, we're starting over. The mitzvos are the instructions of how to practice justice and love, A and B, justice and love, through everything that we've been given, everything that we have in the world, justice and love through those things, and to everything, to all other people, to all other creations, all other beings in the world, and even to ourselves. We're meant to practice justice and love through everything and to everything. part of that, then the second half of that is the mission of the Jewish people, is that we're meant to educate ourselves and the rest of mankind in the ideals of Avodas Hashem. And finally, there are things which relate to the way we are supposed to act in Eretz Yisrael and our home base, but currently in Golis, that no longer applies to us, but we're getting back to that point where those mitzvot are going to be just as relevant. Right? Part of what we're doing as a nation is we're demonstrating to the rest of the world, this is what a nation looks like if they put God at their center. And that's the way we run society. That's the division of wealth. That's all those social and economic issues. We were meant to show solutions to the rest of the world and say, this is what your lives could look like. This is what your communities and societies could look like if you live a God-centered life. That was only relevant here in Eretz Yisrael when we had our own independent nation able to make those decisions. We didn't have that back in Galus, but now it's coming back. We're in the current life, we're able to bring that back because we're back living in Israel. This is a fantastic opportunity. So we have six categories of mitzvot. The way he got these six categories was by opening up a Sefer Torah and reading, opening up a Chumash and reading, what are the ways Hashem describes different mitzvot in the Torah? So if you were like coming off the top of your head, what are some words that the Torah uses to describe mitzvot? If you're like, when it introduces different categories in Sefer Mishpatim, that's in Parshas Mishpatim, that's already a giveaway. He obviously goes through a lot of mitzvot there. In Parshas Kedoshim, he goes through a lot of mitzvot. What words jump out at you as words which introduce categories of mitzvot?
Mishpat is
one. Mishpat is probably justice laws, would be the way we'd describe it ourselves. Other words, chok is a good one, right? Zos chukas haTorah. This clue seems to be a category of mitzvah. So chukim is another one.
Mitzvah,
good. Mitzvah is a third. Mitzvah just seems to be basically commandments, but you have to look in context. Where do we describe individual mitzvahs as opposed to mishpat or chok or any of the other words?
Torah.
Okay, very good. Toros. Do you see this list or are you just guessing? Good. Toros is the first one that he has. Describing mitzvot as Toros. Cool. We have two more. There's Eidos and Avoda. Eidos are mitzvot which are, let's go through each category, but those are the six. So we have Toros, our instructions or doctrines, the historically revealed ideas concerning God, the world, the mission of humanity, and of Israel. Not as mere doctrines of faith or science, but as principles to be acknowledged by mind and heart and realized in life. So the historically revealed ideas concerning, number one, God, number two, the world, three, the mission of humanity, four, Bnei Yisrael. What are some examples of mitzvot that fit into that category? So we have Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yiyah Lecha Elokim Acherim, Don't Do Avodah Zarah, Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, Emunah BaHashem, V'Ahavta L'Rechah Kamocha, is truth about our relationship with other people. Lo Sisna Sachicha B'Levavecha, Gaiva versus Anava, interesting that he has that as a mitzvah. Lashon Hara, Tamim Tiyah, Im Hashem L'Kecha, remembering Har Sinai, and Kedoshim Tiyu, are all examples of Toros, instructions or doctrines that were meant to actualize in real life. Good. Mishpatim are statements of justice towards creatures similar and equal to yourself, basically meaning other human beings. So justice towards other human beings. By reason of this resemblance and equality, I saw a cool quote in a psychology textbook once, I forgot who said it, but the brotherhood of man is predicated on the fatherhood of God. So the idea that all people are created equal, which is part of the founding fathers, we hold this truth to be self-evident, that all men are created equal or something. That idea only is true if there's something which gives them a common source. What would that common source be? The fatherhood of God. So examples of mishpatim is justice, respect to all other people, their property, and life. The right to truth, happiness, peace of mind, freedom, honor, and a peaceful existence, and the warning against abusing legal power. So that's respect for the human body, is a prohibition against murder, injuring another, or beating somebody else unnecessarily. There's respect for human property, is the prohibition of stealing, robbery, withholding possessions or payment, falsehood, lying, flattery, or hypocrisy. These are all examples of the category known as mishpatim. These are things which we understand very, very clearly. It's pretty obvious. Some other monad mitzvot, or other categorizers of the mitzvot said, we didn't even need commandments for these types of mitzvot, because any society needs these type of things built into their legal code, but we have them in such a way that they're not just things we would have come up with if like a group of humans had gotten together in a room and were drawing up a legal code that would have come up with a constitution. A lot of things would have resembled mishpatim, but there are always details which we would not have added ourselves, which make these divine commandments, which teach us the lessons that we're supposed to be taught. There's a class that I took in YU with Dean Eichler. He's one of the deans of one of the other graduate schools, where we compared different sections of the Torah to Far East legal documents of contemporary time period. That's Hammurabi's code and things like that, Assyrian laws and things like that. And everything that we were doing was pointing out the overall yesodos were the same. Pretty startling ways, actually. But there were always details, like small nuances within each law, which were very, very different and really highlighted different perspectives and what was the law trying to accomplish. For example, we pointed out that something which is unique to Jewish law as opposed to all these other systems is that never in Jewish law would you be put to death for a property infraction. For stealing money, taking money, destroying something, any sort of damaging property, no matter how much, you'll never ever get a capital punishment for that. As opposed to all these other, the Assyrians and Hammurabi and everything like that, there are situations where injuring or damaging property could end up with you being killed. And the yesod, or the fundamental, the value that expresses, is at least for us, there's nothing that's prime. There's nothing that goes above human life. There's nothing that supersedes human life. No matter how much money you destroy, no matter how much money you take away from somebody else, there's nothing which would justify you killing somebody else or you being put to death for that type of infraction. So even a mishpat, even something which seems totally rational, has a divine element to it. Then we have category three, chukim. Chukim get a bad rap as things we never understand, have no reasons we can't understand. That's things like kashrus and klayim and everything, and shanas and everything in there. Arbitrary statutes. The reason those things are so hard to understand, Arthur says, there are still reasons for them. There is still a logic to them, but they're statements of justice, not towards other humans, not towards creatures like yourself, but rather towards subordinate creatures, non-human life forms, by reason of the obedience due to God. That is justice towards the earth, plants, and animals, or towards your own body and soul, not as animated, not as a human being, but as just like a body. Like don't rip your skin, don't draw blood, sophis kaka, don't give yourself a tattoo, things like that. So the reasons are so difficult to understand is because we're not dealing with things which are on our own level, we're not dealing with things similar to us, we're dealing with creations which are on a lower level than us or built in a different way than us. And obviously we're not going to understand, we can't put ourselves in their shoes, you could say, we can't be dumb to them, we're not going to understand them, it's so difficult because of that. So a couple of examples, Shiluach, Akeno, Soviet Pinot, Tsar Balechayim, Baal Tashlis, Klein, Kavod HaMeis, Kosher, a lot of good ones in there. Number four, mitzvos, commandments, precepts of love towards all beings without distinction, purely because Hashem said so, in consideration of our duty as men and Jews. So examples of mitzvos is honoring parents, honoring zakenim, divuk l'talmidei chachamim, yishuv eretz yisrael, kedushin, nisuin, gittin, and raising children b'derech Hashem. Tzedakah and Gemilas Chasadim, studying Torah, avoiding intermarriage, Shlukas Akum and Tshuva, Lo Samar Al Dam Reecha, all these mitzvot which have to do with building a society based on love, based on positive giving up of yourself for the sake of another, those all fit into the category of mitzvos. Five, we have Eidos. Eidos is hugely important. Symbolic observances. We're first dedicated an entire volume in his collected writings to going through different mitzvos and explaining what's the symbolism of these mitzvos, and what are the messages that they're supposed to come out. More than all other mitzvos, these are truths which Hashem specifically set aside as things that he wants us to highlight at certain points of the year. So every single Chag and every single Moed, Shabbos and Yom Tov, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, everything that we do over the course of those days, those are known as Eidos, and every single detail of those symbolic observances, why blow a shofar, why take a lulav and an esrog, eating matzahs and avoiding chametz, all those very specific things that we do, actions that we do, are meant to be symbolic, and the more you understand the details, the better understanding, the better grasp of the message you're going to get out of them. Those are things that we do to like drive lessons home for us, which are important either for the individual Jew, collective Yisrael, or mankind in general. So that's a really important category. A lot of the mitzvahs that we do day to day are in the category of Eidos. That's things like Talis and Tefillin. Tefillin is going to be the next one. but all the Chagim, every single Shabbos, all those things are fit into the category of Eidos. Finally, we have Avoda, which is service or worship, everything, Korbanos and Tfila, and there are a couple of other things relating to the Beis Hamikdash, Yesh Beis HaKnesses, Kavod Beis HaKnesses, Beis HaMedrash, things like that. Those are all mitzvot that have to do with Avoda, exaltation and sanctification of the inner powers by word or by deed. He refers to a crazy line somewhere else in one of his essays, basically saying that Shul was never meant to be the be-all and end-all of Judaism. It was never supposed to be that, like, you're checking the box that I did my Jewish stuff today or this week because I went to Shul on Shabbos. It was always supposed to be a training ground or an educational ground where you take ideas, you take values that we're supposed to be learning about, you take this God perspective, looking at yourself, and then you leave Shul and go into real life and take and actualize those values in, like, being a Jew in real life. And he says, if I had my way, I would close all shuls for 100 years to get rid of this misconception, to get rid of this idea that people think that my token Judaism is going to shul and checking that box, and then I can go back to being like a normal person going through life not thinking about the whole Jewish thing. Shul is not the be-all and end-all of Judaism. I would close all shuls and just give people the opportunity to live Judaism at their in their homes, with their families, in their businesses. Real life is where Judaism and Hashem is supposed to be found. So the three overarching principles are justice, love, and education, like we spoke about before, and those spread out into really these six categories of Toros, Mishpatim, Chukim, Mitzvos, Eidos, and Avoda. So the next few letters, the first is going to choose each one, and he goes through what are the mitzvos involved, what are the ideas involved, and give a couple of examples. I think in the next couple of shiurim, we're going to try to break that down and really just choose a couple of examples and go a little bit deeper and say, here's the mitzvah, here's the details of the mitzvah, and here's the lesson that comes out of the halacha. The reason this idea is so wildly fundamental, especially to us as Bnei Yeshiva, is this means that the more you're learning and the more you understand, the more you understand the mitzvos, and the more perspective, broader perspective you have in the mitzvos, and that perspective comes from a strong knowledge of Hamisha Hamzei Torah, and a strong knowledge of Tanakh, of the rest of Nach, a strong knowledge of Midrashei Chazal, and then finally you get to Gemaras and Halacha. The bigger perspective you have, the more you know about the details of every single mitzvah, the more you have at your disposal to put together what does Hashem want me to do to learn from this mitzvah? What's the perspective that Hashem wants me to be getting there? What change does He want me? How does He want this mitzvah to impact my life? So we're learning something like Gittin. What is the framework of Gittin, the mitzvah of Gittin? Tell me about Jewish marriage and ending a Jewish marriage, the framework of building a family, the Bikdusha of Dahara, raising kids in a real structured framework as opposed to just like having a fling with some woman and then sending her away the next morning. The difference between those two perspectives that the world used to have and then Judaism brought into the world with a framework of a very formal Kiddushin in Nisuin and a very even more formalized Gittin if necessary, that's a very strong idea. And then you go through the entire Masechta and you learn about Eidos, and you learn about the Vada'os that you need for a get to actually be kosher. You learn about the words that a get is good for and a get is bad for. The end of Masechta talks about what are good reasons to divorce a woman, bad reasons to divorce a woman. That's all built into the halachos of Masechta's Gittin. And at the same time, you're going through a Gadatas of Masechta's Gittin also. And that's adding like a different perspective that's obviously not halachic. That's the Chachamim kind of zooming out and trying to give us the same ideas that are found in the halacha, but couched or clothed in a very, very different format, clothed in a very, very different way. So we're meant to be learning these lessons. The more you learn about the idea, the more you learn about these mitzvahs, every single individual mitzvah that you do, the more you know about them, the more perspective that you have, which comes from all the learning that you're able to do, that's adding these ideas, that's adding these perspectives, and giving the mitzvahs the opportunity to change you and make you into the person that, number one, Hashem wants you to be. And then for you to go out, once you become that person, and make the society, create the change that Hashem wants to see in the world. Like we said in the first bunch of letters, the whole point of the system, the whole point of making us as Jewish people was to give us the Torah and say, here's the society that I want to create in the world, the society that I'm going to be happy with, that I can come down and live within. Make yourselves into those people, demonstrate those values for everybody else, and create the society where I will feel comfortable. The 613 mitzvos, deeply understood, with a full perspective on the limud and the gemaras and the halachos and everything that, every single machlokas, every single fakira, understood correctly with this perspective, is adding depth to this idea and giving you a stronger opportunity to say, I know, obviously up to 99%, I know what Hashem wants me to learn from this, I'm getting the lesson out of it, I'm changing myself, I'm accepting the Ratzon Hashem and saying, this is who you want me to be, and I'm becoming that person. And at the end of the day, if we really become that nation, if we really become that people, then Hashem, then we've I don't know, there's nothing more inspirational than being the people that Hashem turns to and says, I can't do this without you, I can't do this without every single individual. It's up to you as a person, it's up to you one person, it's up to you nation to make the place, to make the world that I need to see that I'm trying to create.